Straight Talk about vision loss with Mark Riccofono.
Welcome back to another episode of Straight Talk, and we're in 2010. Many exciting things ahead for the National Federation of the Blind here in 2010. But one of the things we've been working on already is access to technology and access to books. And so I thought it would be appropriate today if we spend some time talking about our Jacobus Tenbroek Research Library on Blindness here at the National Federation of the Blind Jernigan Institute. Let me begin, though, by saying that there's a lot of discussion these days about ebooks. And in 2010, we are really seeing the very beginning of the revolution in ebooks. Earlier this year, the Kurzweil National Federation of the Blind Reading Technology Company that came out of the early work of our Jernigan Institute announced an ebook reader called Blio. And the Blio will be a fully accessible ebook reading platform. And so we're very excited with that news, and we look forward to turning the page, so to speak, on ebooks and having access to ebooks in new ways. And recently, Mark Maurer, our president, testified at the Google Books settlement hearing about the importance of accessibility in ebooks and the National Federation of the Blind's support for ebook accessibility in that settlement. Ebooks are very important, but also the literature that we've had for decades, the literature that has depicted blindness through the centuries, and the literature that we have created through the organized blind movement. And the way that we're organizing that and telling that story is through our Jacobus Tenbroek Research Library. And so I've invited to meet with us today Dr. Ed Moorman, who's our librarian. So let's go talk to Ed. Ed, thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Well, you've been with us now for, a couple years, 2 years?
April will be 2 years.
So maybe for the folks that might not have had the opportunity to meet you yet in the leadership you're providing in our library, maybe you can give them a little background on your history.
Okay, well, for those who can't see me, I have gray hair. I came of age in the 1960s and came out of the 60s with a commitment to aspects of social justice, civil rights for racial minorities, support for the women's movement, etc. I was trained as a librarian in the University of Southern California at a library school that no longer exists, and studied history of medicine at the University of Pennsylvania. And for some time after finishing an advanced degree at Penn, I worked in the field of history of medicine. A few years ago, I found myself not working in history of medicine anymore. And when I learned that a position was open here in Baltimore, where I'd been living for the previous few years, I was really intrigued by it. Even more so when I started looking into the NFB website and found that this is really a civil rights movement. It's a consumer movement and a civil rights movement, and it's something that I could feel a real commitment to participate in. I was also excited at the thought of beginning to build a library. My predecessor had done some preliminary work, but there was a lot of exciting stuff to do. And at this moment, when libraries are being transformed by the new digital technologies that you mentioned in your introduction, it's a pretty exciting moment to be developing a research library.
Excellent, and we've been pleased to have you here as part of the team, and most importantly, pleased that you've taken up the spirit of the Federation, which we always love to see.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can talk about the different collections of the library, the different aspects of what is in our Jacobus Tenbroek Library. And I guess we should maybe start by saying it is a research library. It's not a lending library.
Right. It's a research library, and it's and I the the uh, the distinction I make is that it's not a library for the blind. It's a library for the blind in the sense that the organized blind of America own the library and control it through you and the other leadership of the Federation. But it's not a library for the blind in the sense of having talking books or braille books. We don't exclude talking books or braille books or large print books, but our concern is to build a library about blind people and blindness. The core of the library really is not in the collection of printed books. The core, I would say the centerpiece of the library are the papers of Jacobus Ten Broeck. And for people who aren't familiar with Ten Broeck, and I have to admit I wasn't until I came to work here, he was a giant. He was a, besides founding the NFB and being the person who really set the NFB on its course of being a blind-led organization speaking, how is it put? The NFB is not the voice of the blind, it is the blind speaking for themselves, something like that.
It's not an organization speaking for the blind, it is the blind speaking for
right. themselves. Besides getting the NFB started in that way, Ten Broeck at the same time was a professor of political science at the University of California at Berkeley. He had an earned doctorate in law from, I believe, Harvard. He taught at the University of Chicago for a while, and he was a major constitutional scholar. Mm-hmm. Speak mm-hmm. to any lawyer who's worked in related areas, and they'll know of Ten Broeck. Mm-hmm. He left behind him file cabinets full of notes and letters, etc. Some were braille notes that he took, which are fascinating because as many blind people, he developed his own shorthand, and mm-hmm. it's interesting finding the people who can decipher his braille, mm-hmm. And also written and typed letters. His wife was his sighted reader and was his secretary, and she of course was a very active member of the NFB as well. Huge amount of material that Jacobus Ten Broeck left behind that is real meat for historical scholarship, and that's the center of it. And while I'm talking about it, let me mention that last year we won a grant from a federal agency called the National Historic Publications and Records Commission. We were able to hire a young archivist right out of library school, and she's just done a splendid job organizing the Ten Broeck mm-hmm. papers.
Absolutely.
And we'll soon be announcing their availability for scholars. So I would say the Ten Broeck papers is at the center of the library, yeah. and the context in which the library creates for the Ten Broeck papers is the developing collection of published material on blindness, mm-hmm. as I said. Mm-hmm. Now, historically, there have been some pretty good libraries on blindness, but never one that was owned and controlled by the blind themselves. And that's what I'm thrilled to be doing in collaboration with you, with other blind staff members on the organization who are helping us develop accessible means of getting to material that in its essence isn't accessible
right.
because it's ink on paper.
Absolutely.
It's a thrill building that.
And of course, the extensive literature created by the organized blind movement, both in the formal publication side, the publications that we have had through the National Federation of the Blind, but also the thousands of pages of correspondence that represent the corporate archives of the organization also are part of the library archive and a rich resource for scholars as well.
Absolutely, the grant that we won that we've been using to organize the Ten Broeck papers also is going to pay for us to get the corporate archives into shape. Mm-hmm. And they really, in a lot of ways, they're a continuation of the Ten Broeck papers because much of what's in the Ten Broeck papers really is the early history of the organization. And what we've got in the corporate archives is a little bit more of the Ten Broeck years, but also the Jernigan years, very, very well documented. Mm-hmm. And of course, the last 20 some odd years when Mark Maurer has done a splendid job of,
right.
of leading the organization.
And I guess we should also mention, which I know is of interest to many, many blind people, we have a very extensive archive of audio and visual material.
We do, indeed. And we've got the first recording, sound recording of an NFB convention was in 1952. So we have nothing from the earlier years on and recorded sound. Of course, we have some documentation of it on paper. But starting in 52, we have the full convention in sound. And starting a few years later, we also have originally movie film and then videotape, and now, of course, digital recordings of the of the conventions. Mm-hmm. And that the conventions, you might say, are the centerpiece of the audiovisual collection, but mm-hmm. it's much, much broader than that. We have Kids at Play, we have the Youth Slams of the last few years. We've got copies of public service announcements, and we can see how they've evolved over time. We have legal depositions. This material is much of it is now on film or on cassette tape or on reel-to-reel tape, and we are looking forward to getting it all into digital form and having it in a single place where we can retrieve it easily as we need it, either for the NFB's public relations work or for the work of scholars who want to see what we've been doing.
Absolutely, and so one of our goals is to make this large resource available to the world to help the Jacobus Ten Broeck Library be the centerpiece for having a comprehensive research library on the non-medical aspects of blindness. And maybe you can talk about one of our new developments, which is the sort of the door that people are going to use to get in to see what's in our catalog.
That's very exciting. Wes Majerus of the Access Technology Group has been working with our cataloger and with the vendor who is selling us what in library talk we call an OPAC, O-P-A-C, an online public access catalog. Wes has been working with them to make sure that it's totally accessible, and we just linked it to the library page on the website. I hope to get an announcement on the front page of our website soon. It is, or will be, with time, I think, the portal to the world's literature on blindness. And what the catalog will do will not only identify the particular books, print, braille, large print, talking book that we have in the library, but a large amount of material is out there now in digital form, much of it accessible, and we can link to it if it's not copyrighted. Mm-hmm. I recently read a kind of sappy 19th century novel called Poor Miss Finch. I mentioned this in a little book note I put in the Braille Monitor recently. Kenneth Jernigan didn't discuss Poor Miss Finch in his article about blindness in literature, but he did have a footnote, and the reason he didn't mention Poor Miss Finch was not because he wasn't familiar with it. I mean, he was a very widely read man, obviously, but because it didn't conform to the 9 stereotypes that he thought most literature pigeonholed blind people into. And he said the wonderful thing about the novel Poor Miss Finch is that Poor Miss Finch had all of the foibles and feelings of anyone else. She wasn't there to symbolize beauty or to symbolize evil. She was just a person who fell in love and felt and had some problems and was sometimes testy. And we have a couple of editions of Poor Miss Finch. It was originally published in the 1870s, but I've discovered that since it's that old, it's not covered by copyright. There are many, many editions that are available online already, and we will link to that. We'll be looking not only for novels, we'll be looking for books on the management of the blind, policy towards the blind, books by blind folks. There's several 19th century historians who were blind, who did great work on the history of actually the great pre-Columbian civilizations. And that'll all be accessible through our catalog. So it's not all accessible. It's not there yet, but it will be. And it's kind of exciting to be building a research library at this moment when we're moving from print, paper, to all these digital resources.
Absolutely. Now there's thousands of blind people out there who have been collecting this thing and that, whether it's about their own story, newspaper clippings about themselves or things that they've written, or simply because they have an interest in how the blind have been depicted throughout history, books, artifacts. Can I send them here? Can they give them to us?
Can I turn to the camera now?
Yeah.
Send it to us, please. we've got one active member of the organization who's blind from infancy, sighted parents, but his parents were really devoted to him, and they brought him up the right way, even though I don't think he got involved with the NFB until later in life. But his mother made twin vision books for him. She brailled stuff to put on pages of picture books that she would read to him and he could read with her. He sent us those. His mother actually documented his life as he was growing up. Well, he's a pretty intelligent, good guy, and I don't want to take anything away from him, but he's not a Jacobus Ten Broeck or a Louis Braille, and we're interested in regular blind people, folks whose history, and he was fortunate that his parents knew how to deal with him properly. Or whose parents didn't and who had to discover for themselves how to function well as blind people. And we want to have that there. That's really going to set our library apart from other research libraries on blindness. It will be the voice of the blind in
absolutely,
that way.
Absolutely. And I guess part of that we should also say that as the library grows, and right now we have a little bit of it, we're going to have exhibits about the achievements of the blind throughout history.
Sure. When I came to the library, I was very pleased to find the tactile exhibit that Ann Cunningham of Colorado had made about the ascent of Mount Everest by Eric Weinmeier as part of a team of 19 people in the I guess the early part of the last decade. It's a wonderful exhibit. It's five panels depicting the ascent with Braille commentary and as well a wonderful soundtrack that we're about to install in an audio tour format so a person can come to each panel and the blind viewer will be instructed exactly where to put his or her hand on the panel to get a sense of to see really what's there. We've got another exhibit that Ann did to commemorate the Braille coins going into space. We've got the rocket that was built by the kids in the First Youth Slam. Was it the First Youth Slam?
The Science Academy.
Science Academy. We've got the tiles that kids made in another youth program. Last summer, the president of the California affiliate gave President Maurer a regular crooked cane that Jacobus Ten Broeck used before he became an advocate of the long white cane. It's a standard cane that a person who needs a cane to keep from falling over would use, and it was painted white. We've got that. That's going to be a nice historical exhibit, and tactile. Obviously, anyone will be able to come up and touch it. We've got the space coins themselves. In two panels. The actual ones that went up in space are behind glass with with visually readable text, and mm-hmm. and a couple of others that are tactile are on a panel with Braille, explaining how we got them. So we've got a lot of potential exhibits in a museum collection that's not yet mm-hmm. out in the open. But I think that's the next step as we develop the library further.
I think we've covered all of the collections pretty well. I guess we should say maybe it's obvious when we're talking about folks, giving us for historical purposes to keep in trust the things that they have. We also, as part of our audiovisual collection, of course, have material from blind artists of various sorts, music, that sort of thing, and that's one of the collections that people can contribute to as well.
Right. In fact, an active member, a guy on the scholarship committee from Kansas, I believe, is a blues musician, and he sent me several CDs that he had informally made with several combos that he'd put together, and I have to say it's he's pretty hip. I like it.
Ed, anything you want to say about the future of the library, things that we're doing, things that we haven't covered?
Well, a lot of people have, and you mentioned this before and I didn't pick up on it, a lot of people are interested in more of the publications of the NFB being accessible through the web. And I'm pleased to say that we're about to start retrospectively scanning the Braille monitor from, I think right now we have it in digital form back to 87. We're going to do the first 40 years from 1957 to 1986. Mm-hmm. I am hopeful of the digitized Braille monitor in a text format, primarily for a format that's absolutely accessible with a Braille display or a screen reading program. I hope to have most, if not all of it, online by the time of the Dallas convention. People should be aware that Future Reflections is already there. Mm-hmm. The Voice of the Diabetic, which unfortunately we had to stop publishing, about half of it is there, and we want to get the rest of it up. And I'm very interested in hearing from people in the organization or people who are interested in blindness for whatever reason to let us know what they'd like to see. Mm-hmm. I really want our catalog to be, as I said, a portal to the literature on blindness and to the world of the blind speaking for themselves.
Absolutely. Well, Ed, thank you for sharing with us, and we look forward to the many years ahead of building this library resource, something that I think many will look back at this piece of historical digital footage and say, wow, that was really the beginning of some big stuff that in the future is really going to make a difference for blind people. So thanks for your work.
It's exciting to be doing it.
All right. Well, thank you for the straight talk, and we'll see you next time.
www.nfb.org 410-659-9314.